Welcome to the Full Force.
The team Warrant Officer Flint is about to assemble is no ordinary group of people. They are drawn from the world's best military sources, experts in their chosen fields. Combined, they form the most able set of specialists ever assembled. Their name...
Full Force!
I don't like that crazy sound. Show me, dude, what's going down, down. I don't like that crazy sound. Show me, dude, what's going down.
Full Force is the battle cry. All thoughts will be atomized. But Chris, Dave and Eddie, get ready to be lobotomized. We'll have your minds bending. We're talking to the patent pending. And this podcast is free, so don't worry about the spending. If Action Force ain't true love, doesn't matter too much. Cause just like Dave Tree, we will bring you all the cool stuff.
Eddie.
Make sure that nobody leaves. Like the Arctic assault figure. Now everybody freeze. If you like your time wasted over points of articulation and talk of the main characters in numerous situations, in some form or another getting deep with the speculation, why Eagle's a squad leader and does special operations, why we switched to Breaker for the radio communications, why we never saw the special weapons team operating, what is it that Coral does that makes my trousers levitate, and why am I still talking about this stuff 30 years later? An international faction, a small distraction, a change of pace from what you have already heard happen, a world without end, we have entered a different space-time, and now somehow connected to what's on your mind. You're in the right place, just make sure you've got space and be happy in the knowledge you can't see any of our faces. We are the Full Force, we're a full three-course meal of starter, main and dessert embodied in three sorts.
I don't like that crazy sound. Show me, dude, what's going down, down. I don't like that crazy sound. Show me, dude, what's going down, down. I don't like that crazy sound. Show me, dude, what's going down, down. I don't like that crazy sound. Show me, dude, what's going down?
Hello and welcome to the first show of what we hope will be many more. My name is Chris McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80, and along with Dave Tree and Eddie Inman, we will be bringing you news and discussion on the world of Action Force in the UK and other international incarnations of G.I. Joe. We really hope you enjoy what we have to offer and look forward to getting feedback on the show from you, the community. We really do want to hear from you, so make sure you find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thefullforce, on Twitter at thefullforce, and via the website at thefullforce.com. You may have noticed a recurring theme here. Also, feel free to email us at thefullforce@allthecoolstuff.co.uk if you want to comment on the show or just request certain content to discuss in the future. So, without any further ado, it is my great pleasure to introduce you guys to the presenters.
Meet the presenters.
First off, we have David Tree. Hello, Dave.
Hi there, guys. How are you doing?
I'm very good.
Well, I'm very good too.
We also have a Mr. Eduardo Inman.
Hello,
Eddie. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm also good.
And, of course, I've already introduced myself, so we're just going to basically tell you a little bit about each of us, starting with Dave.
Hello to the big wide world out there. My name's Dave Tree. I've been seconded into doing like this two-bit slime show, as someone might famously once said. But my name's Dave Tree. I am the manager of a toy retailer in the UK called All the Cool Stuff. And we have a little shop down in along the south coast of the UK between Bournemouth and Southampton. I myself have been a big toy fan for
3 weeks.
And 2 days and 8 hours. And in that time, I've managed to meet some very strange people by the names of Chris and Eddie. And,
all right.
Here we are. But no, I'm a big fan of toy collecting as a whole, predominantly in not just Action Force and G.I. Joe, but also in Star Wars and Action Man as well. Time to time, dipping in and out of things like Starcom and Transformers as well. Yeah, and I hope this is the first of many, many, many... Too many podcasts with you fine fellows.
Ditto.
How about yourself, Chris?
I'm Chris McLeod. I'm your host for this evening. No, I am a collector of all things Action Force and G.I. Joe. I've been doing it since, a couple of years. No, I've been doing it since the very early 80s. I had Action Force figures from the get-go, the kind of UK Palitoy version stuff, and then I kind of got into G.I. Joe aspect of it, traveled to the States, you know, on holidays and stuff, and just realised that there was an even bigger world out there of G.I. Joe toys and stuff like that, and just have not stopped really since. There was a brief respite in the high school years, much like I think many people that collected G.I. Joe from the early days, mainly because of girls. Anyway, moving on, I am currently a teacher, believe it or not, at Access to Music in Norwich. I do a lot of audio kind of stuff. I own a company called Tape to Reel, and we do music production for television, film, advertising, and so on and so forth. And that's who you can blame for this horrendous audio quality that you're probably going to get with the podcast. But obviously, this is the first one, and we hope to improve and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'll be behind that. And that's pretty much me, really. Just the youngest of the three presenters, may I add. Sorry, guys. And definitely the ugliest, especially if you see the pictures that Dave's put on the website. okay, cool. That's me, Chris McLeod, and yeah, thank you.
Now, I've known Eddie for possibly longer than the court should allow, but as someone who's never been exposed literally to yourself, Eddie, give us an insight into your background and your thought process.
Well, thank you very much. I sounded a bit like the Somerset Elvis Presley. That puts yeah, thank you very much. Right, well, my history is I collected Action Force as a child, and then stopped kind of like you, Chris, in regards to rugby, women and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then about 2008, I retired from playing rugby and needed a hobby, and my good lady bought me some Action Force toys, and that's where it started. And
that sounds like a very good lady.
The last 5 years. Yeah, well, you know, we'd sort of discussed me having a hobby, and I mentioned about Action Force, and she'd never heard of it before, and then she went on eBay and bought me five figures, four straight limbs and a breaker, a 1982 breaker. And I thought, oh, I'll buy some more. And then, unfortunately, I met Dave Tree in and around that time. And that was it, really. Just sort of kicked off from there.
Yeah, so anyway, moving on.
Dave's trip to JoeCon.
Dave's trip to JoeCon. Recently, the Full Force's very own Dave Tree got to visit Indianapolis for JoeCon 2013, and I couldn't be more jealous about that fact. So, Dave, go ahead, tell us all about it. What happened?
Well, I gotta say, it was my first JoeCon, and it was an absolute blast. I couldn't have wished for a better experience, and I mean that genuinely from the bottom of my heart. Going out by myself, not knowing quite what to expect, or
I can't accept this. Like, I can't take this.
This is gonna hurt, boys. Like, but not knowing what was going on and things like that. Everybody was so super nice and so super cool.
And which is that weird, because the stuff they wrote about you when you came back was horrible.
I know. What a bunch of two-faced sacks of shit. But like. But no, it was such a great time. When I literally arrived at the venue, this place was just like unlike anything else I've ever seen. It was like something out of the starting credits of Dallas.
Really?
You know, it's like this mirrored tall bit, and it was the only thing there. It like, just dominated the landscape. I walked in thinking I was ahead of everybody else. And I sat in this bar just having what was like my first drink after, you know, God knows how long.
First of many.
Yeah, with all the flights and stuff like that. And then I realised that there was another bar, and that's where everybody was like sat. For about half an hour, I was like Billy No Mates, like sat there thinking, you know what, I would have thought there'd be more people around than like an absolute pleb, you
it's
know,
like pick on
down
the foreign kid.
I even had that name badge on my like rucksack. But like, yeah, I walked in and then there was like everybody there. First day there wasn't actually an official show day, but I attended a customizing class, which I was probably the most annoying person that they could have ever wanted, because I've never done a custom in my life. And you had all like these top-notch, very talented bunch of guys, you know, showcasing their casting and things like that. And I'm like, they're just like painting a figure black.
<You know? laughs> It's squad leader.
Yeah, it was. And I think this was kind of like the...
I could picture him with paint all over his hands and face.
and mouth. Yes. But like, you know, they, I think they were just like, oh, God, who's this dude? But that evening was like the queuing up for the convention sets and all the exclusives, and it was interesting to me as a
I love those sets.
As a I hope you do. As an outsider, because you always hear criticism leveled at these sorts of events that you're always queuing and things like that. I didn't see it as a problem at all, and I don't know if that's because it's a British thing or anything like that.
It's because we've got that queue mentality. We're fine.
Well, it wasn't so much that. You're there, and you're thinking, well, everybody else is doing exactly the same thing as me right now. So you're not missing out on anything. It's not like there's other events going on. Everybody is doing exactly the same thing as you at that point. And I honestly can't see how they could have really made that much quicker. You line up for your ticket, and that's when you get your box set. And then you join another line... And that was pretty quick, and they set that up in time zones, you know. So
so you're at the back of the queue.
Yeah. And then once you got through, they then sorted that by alphabetical order, so like A to C, D to F, you know, and so on and so forth, depending on your surname. So that was pretty seamless. And then you joined the main queue for all the other stuff, and they went along the line and gave you like a checklist of stuff. So you were like filling out what you wanted, you know, like an Argos sort of chit that you'd like be ticking.
Brilliant. All the international listeners, both of them, will be like, what the hell is Argos?
Argos.
Yeah, carry on. But Argos, Google it.
Argos is a home shopping type.
Or Greek mythology.
Google it.
Fine. Jason and the Argos. It's a very good film. But yeah, you get to the front and you pay for this thing, and they have two queues again, one for cash, one for like credit cards. And it was cool. You had that anticipation, and they were walking around showing you these things. And yeah, it was pretty cool. That's when you got the swag. The Friday is when the show opened up, and then you got like all the panels and discussions going on. Sales floor is opened up. So you can get to see all the traders that have set up stalls there.
And I'd have destroyed that trade floor. I'd have decimated it. I'd probably spent close to about £60 billion.
Well, I actually deliberately stayed clear of it, because I was on limited means as it was, so I didn't really want to get too tempted and sway. There was one thing.
Well, you do have to eat, don't you?
I ate pretty well. no kidding on that front. But you also got in going on in there, the club store itself. You got all the custom competition entries. So you have like the individuals, and then you have the dioramas, and you also have guests signing there as well at different time slots throughout the day, depending on what their movements were. And that was really... You know, that was it. You were kind of really in the swing of it, and you're like getting, you know, seeing everything that's going on. On the Saturday, it then like went up a notch, because it was then general entry. So Friday was really only the guys who were there for the whole weekend, but you had a lot of people who were just coming for like the weekend's sake. So it was very packed and very humid and whatnot. I got to see a lot of great panels, which were very cool and insightful. There was a really nice one with Larry Hammer and Kirk Bazigian, talking about how they interacted as both toy company and Marvel Comics, and sort of worked together to introduce new product into the comic books and the storylines and how that sort of relationship worked. Kirk also did a separate panel on the principles of toy marketing from a G.I. Joe perspective.
Yeah.
There was, of course, the What's on Joe Mind live panel.
You'll have to clear me up on what's on Joe Mind.
It's all about the 12-inch action figure.
The 12-inch. I've heard them talk about that a lot.
There was a another presentation, which, so I'm told, was the biggest waste of a slot ever.
Excuse me.
Well, Chris, you've never been one for slots, so
or wasting them.
But there was some dude prattling on about the UK releases of G.I. Joe and their
Being you then, Dave.
that person indeed being me. But I did a presentation on the Saturday morning, which I wasn't really expecting a large turnout for, because I figured that it was at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning, or no, 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Anyway, it was the first panel of the day. I figured everybody'd be hungover, and where it's like general entry, everybody'd be like running to like the sales room, you know, to get what was left of the exclusives and stuff like that. But it was actually quite well attended.
Awesome.
And I,
you had did, 10 people.
There was 10 people there, including myself, Mike on the stage, and the dude who was sat at the projector.
It was funny though, when you were about to start your presentation, because I'm friends with a few Twitter guys that were actually sat there.
Right.
And they were taking pictures of you and then tweeting me.
Tasteful ones.
No, the kind of stuff where people want to draw you.
It was
Titanic style.
Yeah.
I have to draw you.
Oh, good.
I
forgot about the chaise lounge, but like it was quite comfortable.
It was quite funny because obviously I'm sat, is it the afternoon here, and you know, and I'm getting pictures of you about to do this amazing presentation, and I actually felt quite guilty. Because I was mocking you. But it actually went down really well from what I can gather. And I think your conversation about the sea lion in particular went over really well.
Yeah, well, I've always been a big fan of the sea lion. I mean, that's always been one of my favourite vehicles. And it just...
Oh, right. I thought you meant the actual animal for a second there. I thought you were just talking about like a...
I was going to bring out...
He's so young and naive.
He is, isn't he?
I don't know.
But that vehicle's always been, you know, just beautifully designed and just exceptional. That it doesn't really get the recognition it deserves. But I made the big mistake because it was almost kind of like towards the end, the shepherd's crook coming out to like yank me off the stage because I was prattling on. I mean, who would have thought? But yeah. But the Hasbro was up next, and I said, like, if anybody's got any questions about this stuff, you know, just stop and ask me, or any point over the weekend, because
everyone went home.
Pretty much, that was it. It cleared the room. Yeah. Hasbro was super pissed because, you know, there was no one.
Everyone just left.
But I was, my God, I mean, I was like literally like just answering questions like nonstop, and I was like nearly dying. I just needed to like have a break. But it was cool, and I hope I managed to speak to as many people or answer as many questions as I could, but like it was just kind of crazy.
I mean, one thing I think is fantastic is you know, Action Force from a Palatoy perspective finished you know, nearly 20 years ago. And yet there's still a market for it now, you know, which for me is, you know, is kind of just awesome, you know.
Are we ready, Tom?
We're rolling.
Good. This is Hector Ramirez reporting for your TV news magazine, 20 Questions.
And now the news.
Here is the news with your host, Christopher McLeod. Bombardier. Recently, the G.I. Joe Club released images of all the figure subscription service two figures. And amongst them was our very own Action Force mystery figure, Marge Bombardier. A figure very close to Dave Tree's heart in particular. Tell us about it, Dave.
I'm the guy that helped answer some questions. I'm not necessarily the person who created the whole mystery in the first place. And I think that's always like important to remember, because had that mystery not been there, in the form of a Florida-based collector called Ron Connor, had he not actually put it out there and in such a way that people were aware of that this thing...
Brief history.
So brief
Ron,
history.
Ron Connor finds he finds a figure. He doesn't know. It's just
he
a
finds
flash,
a figure. He puts it up. Nobody knows can help him. So he reaches out to the Joe community to say, you know, can anybody help me find any origin to this particular figure that I've got, because I haven't got a clue. And lots of things were proposed, but nothing really ever came out as what this figure is, or at least one that satisfied his curiosity. Mm. And completely unrelated to all of this, I was doing a whole bunch of work for Lucasfilm, doing a toy exhibit for their Celebration Europe show in London. And I had to do an exhibit on Palatoy, where they distributed the Star Wars toys as well. Now, this was an absolute killer project to do, because whilst there's literally hundreds of thousands of these toys still out there, there was actually very little about the toy company behind it. And considering how successful Star Wars was, you know, it was very surprising that there was very little in the way of any kind of like public records or photos or information. So this whole thing just was exhausting to try and work out who, what, where went on to actually sort of pull the information together for like this show exhibit. And although when we came to it, it went down a treat and everybody was mega happy and thought it was amazing, I was actually quite disappointed with it, because I knew that there had to be a whole lot more information out there. So I continued on researching.
Quest.
Yeah, continued the quest and managed to then sort of find an archive that had all the television adverts for like Star Wars, and then also for like Action Force and things like that. And I was, you know, as you go, you get leads and you chase those leads, and there's a lot of dead ends. But also, you know, when you get a breakthrough, then that helps also give you new directions to like looking. And I was chasing up something, going to check out an archive of material stuff, and I didn't really expect to find much there. It was just like looking through where this was in a museum. But as I was like going through all this stuff, I found a figure that was very unlike the Action Force figure, that was very unlike anything else I'd ever seen. Took a bunch of reference pictures, and I had to go away and just like sort of double check. And this was about 2008. So I went onto the online community to like try and research to see if anybody else had come across this particular figure in the form of it being a prototype or otherwise, and there was no record of it. And it then sort of prompted a lot of questions, and you know, what does this mean? You know, what were there other teams and things like that? And this was a 5-point articulation figure called Boffin. That was what was labeled on the documentation. So I went back, and as I was like working my way through the rest of the stuff that was there, that was when I actually then came across the Bombardier figure, along with a whole bunch of other 5-point articulation guys, which showed that this was an actual unproduced team called Special Weapons Force or Special Weapons Squad, of which you had Boffin, who was the first guy that I discovered, who was like a scientist. You then had another guy called Fixer, Lightning, Sniper, and then Bombardier. And Bombardier, where he was the only Real American Hero repaint, he was actually labeled as coming with like the mobile missile system, which for as Action Force collectors, we actually had that with the SAS. So it seemed a bit odd that, you know, that was in there with them. When I put this up originally, there was quite a lot of initial hesitation to sort of agreeing what this was, because and understandably so, you know, the people that this was relevant to were not in the UK. It was like stateside, and they were just like, well, who the heck is this guy for saying, you know, what this is? You know, he could have just made this whole thing up. And I actually had a couple of guys who knew me through like the Star Wars side of things and the stuff that I've been doing for like Lucasfilm, and they kind of vouched for me, saying, well, hang on a second, this guy's, you know, wouldn't do this. This is the stuff that he might not be known within the G.I. Joe collectors community, but this is what he does in other circles.
Yeah.
So they kind of, you know, sort of vouched for what it was that I was doing. But I then had the opportunity to meet up with a chap called Bob Bricken, who was the lead designer on Action Force. And as we were like talking and going through some like old photographs, he actually had a shot of Special Weapons Force in amongst like these photographs, and they were repainted differently.
Is that picture out in the public domain, Dave?
Yeah. Probably the best place to view that is on Blood for the Baron. They've got like a little bloodforthebaron.com, and then in their toy archive they have a little special weapons team section that goes through like the history, and then you can see like different photographs of what was there. But these guys look more like the Thunderbirds, you know, in terms of the paint colors. And where I asked Bob's a fantastic guy, but he's also like trying to remember things that were like about 30 years ago now, and you know, was just one of hundreds of things that he worked on. So he's just like, well, you know, we did a lot of different things, you know, but effectively we distilled it down to the ones that, you know, made it out as toys. But what was great from my perspective was that this was from a different, completely different source, things that backed up the information that I found in the first place. The fact that you had the mobile missile system, you had like, you know, the same lineup of guys that, you know, I found, even though they were painted differently. And when I came to talk to Ron Connor about what it was that was discovered, he was happy with the explanation and things like that. And he actually suggested that if I go back and have a look at the Bombardier figure again and like sort of carefully look at in between the joints and things like that, it may have been repainted to the colorway that he's got and what was there from the colors that were featured on the photograph, you know, for the toy catalog. And sure enough, you know, he was dead on. You can sort of see the two different layers of paint applications. I will say that the one that's over here in the UK is a hand painted straight arm flash, whereas the figure that Ron's got, which started the whole thing in the first place, is in production molded colors and is in a swivel arm.
Right.
So it's pretty cool that, you know, he's got that.
So there's almost two.
Yeah.
Like, what's the word? Kind of like a variant.
Yeah.
That's pretty intense.
Exactly that, you know. Because the one in the UK is just literally like hand painted.
Have they literally only made two of them for the figure subscription service as well, and only two lucky people again? Could you imagine that? It would make it pretty collectible, but yeah, that would really suck.
But do you think that there's a possibility that there's actually more out there? Because as you know, they did an awful lot of prototypes.
Yeah, I mean, at this point,
how many of the Palitoy designers and people that worked at Palitoy are kind of reachable, or have you spoken to, or, you know, not reach aroundable, Eddie? But how many of them can you actually, you know, do you think you can get hold of to talk about this? Because I mean, there must be, you know, design. I mean, it would have been the guys that actually designed it that would have kept it.
Yeah. The thing that you've got is.
Did they dump it in Leicester, Dave?
It could well have been. I mean, as in with any kind of like toy design. Well, as in with any toy product, you go through several different phases of people who are working in different areas. You would have say, like the concept designer. You would have then people involved in like the manufacture. You'd have people in marketing who would then possibly work with people in like packaging design, and then the printers in that sense, and then the distribution. You'd have like liaison in once that's all approved, you'd have like a liaison in with the factory that would then distribute them out, you know, for samples and like, you know, signing off, and then go to like, you know, distribution from there, you know, either from like the Far East to where, whichever country it's going to, and then within that, the various different distribution points. So it's very difficult to say, and remember, Palatoy back then was only really going to be the UK, with the exception of like one or two things. So you weren't talking like a massive team of people. You were probably at best talking about sort of two or three guys that would be working within each sort of department or area. I've been very fortunate through the work that I've been doing, talking to a lot of different folk at different levels. But I also haven't come across people who are working in on the same thing. So it's not like, oh, yeah, well, I worked alongside this person, you know, and I created this toy, and this person created that toy for that toy line.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's stuff that you'd expect people to forget anyway, wouldn't you? You'd expect people to not remember stuff, or you know, especially with the time frame you're talking about. But there must be manufacturers that have some of those toys that were in prototype stage. And how did it get out to the States? That's what I want to know. How did that cheeky little flash repaint get out there?
The theory that Ron had was where he purchased it from a toy dealer. The toy dealer thinks he actually got it from Kirk Bazigian, who was the head of boys marketing for Hasbro. And that would stand to reason that they would probably have to like sign off certain aspects of their products being used for Palatoy.
Yeah.
So, you know, just in case it was like a misrepresentation or something like that. So they would probably get samples of things sent across saying, you know, this is what we would like to do with your Mobat. And, you know, and it would be accompanied by a little picture or something like that.
Where can I put the barrel? Sorry, Karen.
But, that would make sense, you know. And then equally from the same point of view that there's a lot of these things, and then the guys there are just like, well, it's just a bunch of stuff. We kind of all have like these high hopes that they're going to have crystal clear memories and know exactly.
Yeah.
And I've had conversations with people who've worked within Palatoy, and one person's version of events has completely contradicted another person's events.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, right, and you kind of like having to pick through the bones of what bit makes sense and who's right.
The G.I. Joe Collectors Club Magazine.
There will be a few spoilers in this next segment, so please go away, read it now, and come back to us later if you haven't done so already. So, the new Collectors Club comic. I have it now. Dave, you have it. I know you have it.
I have it.
Yes.
Do you have it, Eddie?
No, right. I'm afraid not. So you're going to have to tell me all about it.
I'm going to have to tell you everything about it.
Yes,
so
yes, please.
we have mentioned her name a couple of times, or not Eddie's. We have mentioned her name a couple of times already in the show, and that is Quarrel, who appears pretty much all over the magazine this month.
Centerfold, even.
Yeah. Is that, hang on, wait. Oh, you must have got a different one to me.
Eddie's now going to go get a coffee.
Yeah. Do you see a chuff? Do you see her chuff? Anyway, so.
Quirkula canoes, honey.
So, not only does What's on Joe Mind host Justin Bell give us an in-depth review of the current club figure subscription service 25th style figure, but we also see her in action in the comic section against the Nanobats. So in the actual comic, she's all over it. We also see her Z-Force rapid fire motorcycle. Unfortunately, in the comic, spoiler alert, a Nanobat destroys it. We also get a glimpse of a few of her teammates at the end of the last panel. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Eddie.
No, I'm not.
Because you hadn't got up. From what I could make out, it's Jammer, the bad Mama Jammer. it's pretty the second to last panel to the end of the comic.
Doc, Jammer, and an uber cool Z-Force infantryman.
Yeah, so it's infantryman. Yeah, cool. That's
maybe generic character, or it could be Tracker.
Yeah.
If it's the sapper in his infantryman outfit, which he was sometimes depicted in the comics.
Yes, I mean, lots of cool stuff from the Collectors Club magazine this month.
G.I. Joe, a real American hero.
Larry Hammer has been busy cramming red shadows into his recent issues of A Real American Hero. I've been enjoying the comics recently. I'm a big fan of lots of different comics, but G.I. Joe has always been massive in my collection.
Larry's not listening to this.
Don't worry, I'm not gonna. It's not just
A Real American Hero. It's other stuff as well.
I'm your biggest
Larry,
fan.
Larry, I'm your biggest fan. I think I love you. No.
Why don't you return my calls?
Why don't you ever respond to my Facebook messages?
I've been emailing you for years.
No, that's not true. You can't prove it. Eddie, you can't prove it, so I'm just going to ignore that. So, yeah, I really have, though, been enjoying A Real American Hero. It's the last magazine, the last comic I read at the end of my kind of stack, and I get quite a few every week. So, yeah, it's amazing. Save the best to last. So, recent issues, 188 and 189, saw the return of Dr. Adele Burkhart. That name ring any bells to you guys?
Yeah, she's the chick from the first episode.
Yes, the opinionated do-gooder from the very first issue of Hammer's original 155-issue run. So the story is in. It's only like a. It's a kind of. It's almost like a short bridge story. It's only like a two issue kind of little arc, bridging two big storylines. But what we have is an American registered oil survey ship called the Aden Explorer is hijacked by pirates off the coast of Kerguelen in East Africa. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. It's made up anyway. A small protest ship with Dr. Burkhart in tow collides with this massive explorer, and the occupants are taken on board by the pirates. Cue G.I. Joe. So, a number of the G.I. Joe teams approach the ship from different areas, different points, attempt to board the ship with resistance. You have one team in the whale, one team on like a little dinghy. It's like a night land. It looks like the night landing kind of craft. And another team in the Tomahawk. So, or what it's going to be known as, Dave, next, when it comes
Eagle
out
Hawk.
Again, the Eagle Hawk. They attempt to board the ship with resistance. It is revealed the Black Major and the Red Shadows are helping the pirates, and all hell breaks loose. The Joes save the day, needless to say. No, yeah. issue 188, nobody died. Issue 189, nobody died. Yeah, it's like that. So the Joes save the day with just a few
nobody
injuries.
Nobody outside of the UK has any idea
no,
what we're talking
but
about.
It doesn't matter. The Black Marjorie escapes to fight another day.
We're talking about Roadblock.
Yeah, Black Marjorie. Amazing. I'm already looking forward to what Larry does with the Red Shadows next. Well, when I'm sure he'll use them again, but for now it appears that it's kind of, you know, done and dusted. In the actual comics themselves, I really love the way they updated Mouton in issue 188. He's like, there's only one of him, obviously, in this particular thing. There's not like an army of him, but he's, you know, like a basically like a battle android trooper, but like nails, huge, you know, just unstoppable. But Torpedo manages to get a charge, shape charge on him and just blows a hole through his stomach. And another cool little thing, another great reveal, was the Robo Skull at the end of issue 188, and then the resulting battle in the next issue with the Killer Whale, including one of those kind of ridiculous moments when Cutter uses a wave to literally flip the Killer Whale kind of upside down, so because they can't move the guns get damaged in that classic way. Guns get damaged, they can't then like fix position, so he has to kind of do this crazy little maneuver, and you know, doesn't take the Robo Skull out, it still kind of survives, but it's a cool little move. Really enjoyed it, both issues, and loved the fact that I was seeing kind of Action Force characters again coming to life. I mean, it was only the Black Major, Mouton, and the actual Red Shadow kind of infantry that were in there, but it was, you know, really good. Will you guys read it now after my amazing review?
You know, if it wasn't for the fact that it's like 8:30, I'd be running out now to get it. No, seriously, I have wanted to pick this up because I've been annoyingly at a couple of comic shows and nobody's had them.
Yeah, that was weird. We were at the one on last weekend, weren't we? And there was
And at Bristol a couple of weeks before, and nobody had them there. So I'm probably going to be resorting either to trying to like get them through eBay or something like that, or for the trade paperback. I mean, question for you, Chris, is
yes.
From the point of view of, do I have to go back?
Not at all.
So this would actually be a stepping on point for someone who's not followed the series up to this point?
Absolutely.
Because not that I don't want to, because I really do, but like I literally haven't had cash to.
No, I totally understand. And with this particular like 188, 189, you don't have to kind of go all the way back and get them again, you know, to kind of follow what's going on. In fact, it's a completely standalone storyline from what's happened previously and what will be happening in the next issue. So you can jump on A Real American Hero, no problem. From 188.
I mean, I would like them. So if anyone out there has them, please nice. Contact me. I'm known as at Eddie Palatoy on Twitter, and I'll happily take them on. So thank you very much.
Well, you'll take on that person.
In a fight.
Fight to the death to see who owns those comics. I like it. That's the end of the news and time for a little break and a word from our sponsors.
Oh, thank God.
So, thank God for the sponsors. So, see you on the other side.
Who are our sponsors?
All the Cool Stuff is a proud sponsor of the Fall Force. Come visit our store near the New Forest in Hampshire for the latest toy collectibles, including G.I. Joe, Transformers, Star Wars, Masters of the Universe, and Lego. We also stock a large inventory of vintage toys too, including Action Force, from loose figures and accessories to carded and boxed vehicles.
I can see the whites of their beady little eyes.
Looking to sell your toy collection? All the Cool Stuff will buy and convert your toys into cash. You can call the store within the UK on 01425 650 696, or if calling from outside the UK, don't forget to add the international dialing code first of 44. You can visit us online at www.allthecoolstuff.co.uk, or email if you have a specific inquiry, sales@allthecoolstuff.co.uk.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the internet's number one and longest running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right. And we, hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we, okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
Welcome. Roll out, roll call, and Twins of Power. On the 12th and 13th of October 2013, Southampton's Jury's Inn will play host to the event of a lifetime. Roll out, roll call is for fans of Transformers, Action Force, and G.I. Joe, and Twins of Power is for any Masters of the Universe fans out there. Dave can talk us through the plans so far and the guests that he can announce at this stage. Dave.
Hello.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes. Rollout Roll Call is returning.
Yay!
Hooray! Now I've had.
I might put applause in there. I'm going to put some like canned applause in there.
Yeah, and fireworks as well. I want fireworks.
Definitely fireworks.
Give me fireworks.
The beginning of the movie, the 87 movie.
The therapy that I had following the end of the last show, I've completed that session and
dude,
now,
I apologized for everything I did.
I know.
It
was bad. Yeah. We started planning for Rollout Roll Call for 2013, we've actually ended up going a bit later this year for a couple of different reasons. But that's not a bad thing. It actually means that we can get a lot more involved and things like that. And the first one of those things, the most notable thing, is Twins of Power. Twins of Power came about. This is something I've been talking about with James Etock for quite a while. James Etock is an editor of an amazing magazine called Serial Geek, which is all about the animation of the 1980s. It's nice. A self-published title and looks at all the different cartoons that were through the 1980s period. A lot of crossover with like G.I. Joe. But he is a huge, huge, huge Masters of the Universe fan and has written a couple of different publications himself all about Masters of the Universe and He-Man and She-Ra. And I've said to him, why don't we do either a Serial Geek show or a He-Man show? And this has been sort of going back and forth actually ever since the very first Rollout Roll Call. And what came about this time round is a couple of the guests actually have crossovers into both Masters of the Universe and G.I. Joe Action Force and Transformers. So we decided to create this sort of sub show, and it's no extra price, but it's just going on at the same time. And if it's popular enough, then it'll be a show in its own right. Now, the guests that we got that kind of have that crossover, you've got James Etock, he's coming. So the editor of Serial Geek. You've also got a chap by the name of Emiliano Santalucia, who has done so much for all of these brands. It's actually crazy. He's done a lot of work for Mattel on the Masters of the Universe brands.
Cool.
He does a heck of a lot of stuff for Hasbro now for like Transformers.
Cool.
And worked for IDW doing like some of the comics as well. And then on G.I. Joe, again, he's done a lot of toy design and also did a lot of comic-related stuff for Devil's Due Publishing.
Nice.
So he's although he's not necessarily someone that, you know, springs to mind, you think G.I. Joe when the name comes up, he has done an awful lot of work within G.I. Joe, either through Devil's Due Publishing or through Hasbro. So that's super cool that he's coming across from Italy for the first time since about sort of 2002 to sort of like showcase and talk about a lot of stuff. And hopefully by that point, one of his big products that he's been working on, which was Metroplex for Fall of Cybertron, that will be out as well. And I know he was involved in a lot of the conceptual design work on that front.
I want
We've also got Eamon O'Donoghue, who's not really worked within the world of like G.I. Joe, but he's very much, he's an illustrator, but he's very much connected within the Masters of the Universe world, and is one of the hosts of a podcast called Roast Google Dinner. So he'll be like popping along. And then we've got a couple of other things that are lined up our sleeves, but I cannot go into too much detail as of yet.
That's fair enough, mate.
I'll be there anyway. So
I think you might have. Oh yeah. I'll tell you what. I mean, one of the things I'm kind of keen on is having the sort of fan community involved as well, because you know it gives people a chance to like do sort of interaction and non location sort of. Work as well. So within that theory, you know, we could ourselves, I mean, are you guys up for it? Do you want to do a panel and do like perhaps maybe a live recording?
Yes, absolutely. The Full Force podcast live at Rollout Roll Call.
I mean, that would be pretty cool. Hopefully as well, the guys from Back to the 80s will be present as well. I know Glenn Jakeman will be attending, so hopefully he'll be available to, you know, I mean, this could be taken in the form of either individual podcasts or like a super podcast.
Do a super podcast. Multicast, it would be awesome.
Multicast, yeah. Lilu Dallas multicast. I'm liking that idea. Yeah, no, that would be pretty cool, and we could, you know, it could be almost like a roundtable mishmash discussion that kind of like goes out and then helps promote everybody's like respective pieces of work. We'll pull theirs down. We can only gain. So there's a lot going on, and then hopefully we'll be doing this as a.
Is it the same rooms as last, like the same level as last?
It is indeed.
Year?
It's the first floor of the Jury's Inn Hotel. We take over the whole floor.
I quite like that. I loved how all the shops were in little rooms. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, I mean it's
you are,
it's kind
you're
of
you're in like your own though, Chris. Right?
I was in the padded room. Yes, I was. I was with Nick at Toys and Games, who I've name dropped yet again. He's basically I hang out at his, Nick Wells at Toys and Games. I basically spend the majority of my life when I should be at work at Toys and Games with Nick and Mass and Kim, who work
Nick,
there.
Nick who?
Nick Wells. I'm not sure if you've heard of him before.
No.
Toys and Games.
Okay.
And. I'm not going to say it, because just in case it's not a show sponsor, and I'll edit that bit out if I have to, Dave. but yeah, and yeah, in that little room, we had a nice little setup, and yeah, he did really well that weekend.
Yeah, no, he did really well. I mean, it's kind of funny, because you kind of feel like, you know, should it be like a big room, like you see at some of the shows, and everything's all in there. Whilst it'd be nice to have some of these big venues and stuff like that, I think a lot of people again almost have to sort of bear in mind, number one, the number of people involved in making the whole thing happen is just literally a handful. There's also financial constraints, you know, so budgetary constraints in terms of what you can and can't do, and you can't just like all of a sudden go to like these huge sort of exhibition arenas, like, you know, straight away. But each show that we do gets bigger, is more popular, more people come, you know, introducing new elements like, you know, Twins of Power and things like that certainly help and sort of cross promote all the different things. So,
I mean, consider the first one, Dave, I mean, yeah.
I want to hear about. Can you guys talk us through, both of you, the first ever rollout roll call, please?
Well, a bit like this podcast, everything's Eddie's fault.
Yeah.
And Rollout Roll Call is actually Eddie's fault.
Actually, kind of is Eddie's fault for this podcast.
Yeah,
because
no, it is.
I was talking to him, it was me and you, Eddie, on Twitter, wasn't it? And I think you guys have spoken about it before, about doing something like this before, between yourselves, but it did gain some momentum when we spoke on Twitter, didn't it?
Yeah.
So it is basically his fault. So yeah, take us through Rollout Roll Call number one.
Well, the whole thing is Eddie's fault, because he was complaining that nothing ever happens for his birthday.
Oh.
So we created.
Was this on his 50th?
This was so to mark his 50th. I got you know, a couple of wheelchair ramps installed and things like that.
And somewhere for my dialysis machine as well, isn't it?
Exactly. But no, we created this thing, you know, effectively, which was just an open day and try and deck out the whole shop for like full of Action Force and G.I. Joe stuff, and Eddie came down and bought Lego.
actually, I bought loads.
That's like a vivid memory for you, Dave. You're like so angry that you bought Lego.
No, it's a true story. The most he spent was on Lego. He it was a Tantique 4, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But I did buy quite a lot of the stock, if I remember rightly.
No, you did.
I had bags and bags of stuff.
You did. You did.
You felt obliged, Eddie, that's why.
Yeah, I had no choice because he did set the shop out for me because it was my birthday.
Yeah, so we called it roll call. And then a couple of months later, we did Roll Out, which was the same idea but with Transformers. And we had Simon Furman very graciously came down for it.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'll never forget Simon's face when he sort of turned up, and he was kind of, it was one of those things where he's just like, okay, this is in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, and this is the shop. And you're just like, oh, okay. But like that day was just insane. And at the end of it, Simon was just like sat there like, what just happened?
You really? Know, because was it busy?
He could not move. He was barricaded. Right. And it was so packed. I mean, that day still, even though that was 3 years ago, that day has still got the record for the most takings in one day because it was just absolutely nuts.
Well, it was funny that day because obviously I'm not much of a Transformers collector, and
that was quite unfortunate as your mic just went out a little bit there, Eddie, and it just sounded like I'm not much of a trans, and then it kind of cut out a little bit, so it could have been anything.
I'm not much of a Transformers collector, and that day particularly was just hilarious because Simon Furman was sat sort of at the shop counter,
yeah,
and surrounded by Transformers collectors, just surrounded all day with things like, in episode 4 of comic 12, and you wrote that, and I want to know, and it was just that all day. It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. I felt really sorry for him.
Simon is fantastic in that respect because he's dealt with like the fan community for such a long time. He's actually kind of impervious to it, so he's not freaked out by it anymore. And he's brilliant with everyone because he answers everybody's questions to the best of his ability and things like that. But where he did so much for like Action Force as well, like doing all the Marvel stuff, he never gets asked anything related to that. It is all 110% Transformers and you know, the different characters and the stories that he did back then and now still does now for like IDW and all the rest of it. But I think he was just kind of like sort of lost for words by the end of it because it was a it was a Sunday in April. And it wasn't particularly warm, but inside the shop, the temperature, heat was just like, just absolutely nuts. But then from there, we decided to like combine the two together and then like move it across the road into the town hall because of what happened at Roll Out. And then that then became the first combined event, which was then, we just called Roll Out Roll Call 2. Roll Out Roll Call 3 was the first weekender event, so it was like 2 days, and then that's where we had it in the hotels in Southampton last year, and then this is the fourth show. So it seems like it was an age ago that we actually embarked on this whole journey, thanks to Eddie. In real terms, it is actually only the fourth show still.
This is going to sound really sad. That was easily one of the best weekends ever. For me, just to
it's
pretty sad. The fact that I got to meet Larry Hammer. No, I got to meet Larry Hammer. So I got to
flash Larry Hammer last
you
year.
You did,
really?
Wardrobe
malfunction.
I mean, Larry probably, I don't know what he thought of it because he got flashed by Eddie.
Wow.
He got James Cavanaugh Jr. coming up to him demanding money be put in his Skeletron pants and stuff like that.
Wow.
And then you had John Austin as well, who was an Iron Grenadier, and he was kind of like showcasing his manly bits around as well.
Did he think it was one giant sex party?
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, he's probably like thinking... we're just like, laughing our heads off, seat of our pants, like, what the heck is going on? Especially where James came in dressed as Skeletron and he was like, demanding that, people shake his money, but, all this sort
that
of stuff.
That was funny. But, I must admit, that was hilarious. But yeah, meeting James as well was was brilliant, and chatting to him, meeting Eddie, because I only met you briefly, Eddie, didn't I? But
yeah.
That was
the highlight of your life.
It was, because you were dressed as Gung Ho, and I was like, look, check this guy out. Because this is going to sound really bad, but I'd met on Twitter Annie before you, hadn't I? And
I'd been
chatting to her, not in a dodgy way. I wasn't, you know, trying to get in on Eddie's chick or anything like that.
I was going to say, for the benefit of folks at home, Annie is the other half of Eddie, the other half of the Palatoid duo.
Yes, and I just got chatting to her.
And Chris had been chatting to her a lot.
I haven't been chatting to her a lot. It was just maybe 300 to 400 Twitter messages.
God damn it!
The direct ones, so that no one else can see what I'm saying. No, I'm kidding.
I can't see, don't it.
No, literally just got chatting to her about the show, because I think I was chatting to Dave, or I was responding to a rollout roll call thing, I think it might have been the rollout roll call Twitter thing I'd responded to, and we just got chatting about it, and lo and behold, she turns up in a Lady J costume and in tow Gung Ho, and I was like, who's this crazy son of an individual? And never really got to speak to her than that, did I, Eddie? Just that one little kind of brief hello, and then that was pretty much it.
Kind of went hi, and then that was it.
Yeah, I don't even remember seeing you for the rest of the weekend. But you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah,
it was crazy, but also, and I'm actually looking forward to meeting you properly, face to face, in, you know, good old fashioned handshake. I was going to say something else there, I'm looking forward to seeing you properly, actually, in the next one, in October. So
yes,
lovely stuff. So that's basically roll out roll call. Talked about last year, fantastic, yeah. Really good panels as well, I kind of have to add, that you had last year, Dave. Really cool stuff.
Well, they were awesome, actually. The panels were just...
The Larry Hammer one, for me, where he was deconstructing the issue 21. Issue.
That was
the only one I really managed to sit all the way through without sort of being pulled off. Oi. To do other things.
He got pulled off at half time.
That was a great weekend. Okay. But like,
he was getting pulled off, Chris, left, right and centre. I'd never been to a con before, so I was just really excited. And Dave was bearing the brunt of it. But no, it was really cool, actually. The panels were great. Meeting loads of new collectors and fans that I'd only either known either online or hadn't met at all. There's really good banter anyway between the guys that own all of the different shops and sell, and the traders basically. And they, you know, I've got a really nice kind of relationship with all those guys. Easy. And my big moment was picking up a vintage whale. So that's the first time I've ever owned a killer whale.
You picked up a real whale.
Got beached.
Wow, you're really strong.
Got
man.
Beached on Southampton, so I had it. So what was your favourite moment, Eddie?
For me, probably my favourite moment was when Jim Bob, dressed as... what was he dressed as? Shipwreck.
Oh, yeah.
And when I asked what character he was, he said Galvatron, which I thought was awesome.
Kind of like, what the hell do you think? Yeah.
It was just really funny.
Which one of the village people are you? Yeah.
But I think the whole weekend was just fantastic, really, because it was... it was just really good. I think everything was really good.
Okay, so moving on. Segment 5. We're going to have a little look at a figure from the Palatoy Action Force range. The SAS Squad Leader.
Accessing Full Force Data Archives. SAS Squad Leader. Codename Eagle. File name Buckingham Charles R. Serial number AF 3, 4, 6, 9, 8. Primary, military, speciality, guerrilla, warfare, secondary, military, speciality, commando, assault, place of birth, Middlesex, England.
So, if Eddie, if you want to kind of take the reins on this one and maybe take us through the figure's background and so on and so forth.
He actually came around from, or was inspired by, an Action Man figure, which was inspired by the Iranian hostage crisis from 1979.
Yeah. Do you know, as a kid, I was fascinated by that whole situation and had like that, you know, that I always used to love it when the documentary used to come on, you know, about that. And I think that kind of was one of the reasons I really liked kind of Action Force and G.I. Joe, because of that kind of link as well. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an iconic sort of video of the SAS, you know, storming the embassy.
Yeah.
And I think the boffins at Palatoy had released probably my favourite range of Action Man, which was the Eagle Eye Blue Pants era, and had released... an SAS figure in that.
Yeah.
And then...
Eagle Eye Blue Pants is going to be my name on Twitter from now on, I think. That is amazing.
Because it is awesome. And they decided to... when they wanted to break into the market from selling Star Wars as sort of 3 3/4-inch figures, and they were going to do their own range, they used the top 12 selling Action Man of the time to create Series 1 of Action Force. And one of those being the SAS squad leader, as it were. So you ended up with a carded figure, which was just SAS, which had the MP5 and just the grappling hook, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah. And what is that gun also known as?
Say it.
Heckler and Koch.
Thank you. And I don't have to bleep that out.
The one time you can say when you're putting the Heckler and Koch in it, it's okay to say with Heckler and Koch.
Yeah, yeah. So
carry on.
So that was the sort of first incarnation. Series 2, he was released as SAS squad leader. With a logo this time on his shoulder, with an SAS logo.
Cool.
And so that's a repaint variant.
That is a repaint variant indeed.
I've actually got the figure in my hand as we speak. I'm guessing I've got the one that's in the show notes, basically, with the SAS on the arms, on the shoulders each side.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the difference with that one is he actually he had a Heckler and Koch.
Yes.
The grappling hook and a rope with it this time. And then there is another version, a German version. I don't know if you know anything about that, Chris.
I don't know.
Tell us.
There's a German version called a Sat. His name is Adler. Do you know anything about the German side of it?
No, this is all new to me, and I'm gratuitously interested about it.
Basically, Action Force was released in Germany, but because of political things in regards to Red Shadows and stuff, and sort of links to Nazis, they were released without logos, and it was slightly changed. Everything was slightly changed. So, with the German squad leader, he was a Sat Adler. He had an ATT logo on his shoulder. But came with a sort of a black gun that looked like, to me, it looks like a Major Blood weapon.
Okay, that kind of little pistol with the kind of like triangular end kind of on the end of it.
He had a grey ammo box and detonator. So it's again another variant. So you've got three,
cool.
Essentially three variants.
I was not aware of that actually at all. Carry on. Every now and again, I'll just tell you what I didn't know beforehand. So it's like, you know.
So carry on.
I'll be doing it a lot.
So the early, the I mean, with most Palatoy figures, I think there's probably so many variants that, you know, you could spend weeks trying to sort of sort out everything that there is out there, you know, because they seem to change and change this and change that. I've not seen many in regards to the squad leader himself. I don't know if you've seen any other variants, Dave, or anything like that.
We got the. I mean, if you go to the sort of next level of OCD-ness of variants, you have the difference in plastics, don't you? So you have the bendy plastic, and then when they you got ones where the hands are quite malleable, and then you got ones that are very solid in terms of, you know, their thumbs and their forefingers are very rigid, and it's not so much on the squad leader, but on some of the other 5-point articulation figures, there are even bigger differences than the actual feel of it in sense of height or molding changes.
Difference in the look of the plastic as well, like the shine on it? Is it like is one duller than the other, or does that not really come across?
Kind of, but I think it's more specific to what the character is. And what sort of like paint jobs that they've had on it?
Yeah, because you look at the Red Shadow in particular for a prime example of.
I have him in hand as well head. Right now.
Do you really? Because you get one with more of a sort of pointy face.
Yeah.
Because there's two types, and the pointy face one, I suppose, that's the doofus one, which people don't like. Particularly, I don't mind. I think they all look great anyway. But there's so many paint variations as well in the figures themselves.
The sort of second wave of the SS squad leader. That's probably about the only sort of variation, the other sort of variation that I can think of.
Yeah. If, like, say, I don't know, G.I. Joe Club. Got hold of Eagle as an option to maybe do a modern figure. What parts would you use, guys? What would you think you could use, like, from the modern kind of array of like parts to kind of make an Eagle character?
So is this kind of like if we were the club?
Yeah,
or Hasbro, and we're making this character.
You're not allowed to spend any money,
right? Using parts that we've already got.
Yeah,
to make Chris, that is an amazing idea.
I know, it's almost like someone else thought of it. I wrote it down in some sort of show note form, and I'm now regurgitating it out at this stage.
That is fantastic.
It's almost like something like that's happened. It's almost like something,
imagine the possibilities.
I know. Do you know what? I think we should make it a regular feature. Whenever we do some sort of figure, we should discuss the modern interpretation and parts you would use and stuff like that.
Chris, you're the man.
Oh, I know. What have you got then, guys? What do you think? What do you think you could use?
The original figure itself is all dressed in black.
Yes.
He has...
Easy paint app. I'm just saying.
Yep. He's in black, and then he's kind of got like a combat vest, and then a flash hood and a gas mask and a Hecklin cock. Now, what you could use, you got a couple of different ideas, really. I mean, the 30th anniversary airtight figure, that head sculpt alone can be used for half a dozen Action Force characters, because using that whole analogy, you know, where Palutoy had to reuse parts again and again and again in different forms and whatnot. You know, a lot of these parts could be used to use across more than one figure. You've got like things like Beachhead's gas mask. You've got the Alley Viper gas mask from Pursuit of Cobra as well.
Yeah.
But I personally think what would actually be a good, not necessarily the whole figure, but like certainly a lot of parts from it, but the Pursuit of Cobra shock trooper.
Yeah.
Because he had...
he's got the vest.
He's got like a tactical vest. He's got a helmet and a gas mask, and you can remove the gas mask if you want. But that kind of comes close to a figure being true to the original figure.
Yeah. I definitely think Airtight's head would be wicked, because obviously you've got that hood, type yeah. thing. And we've got that great picture of Eagle that, you know, that we can put on online or something for people to see. But, you know, the fact that, you know, he's got that kind of like, it's almost like identical to what Airtight looks like. You know, you just have to kind of obviously just, you know, it's just a paint app really. And then, like you say, the Beachhead gas mask or the Alley Viper one. Obviously, you might have to make some alterations. I'm not sure. I haven't actually tested whether that helmet would fit an Airtight head, but
it doesn't.
It does it not?
No.
Are we talking too tight or too big?
Airtight's head is actually massive.
Yeah.
Compared to a lot of the other,
because he's got a helmet, so you kind of think that. Easy.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like where I was thinking about the Cobra Shock Trooper, where he's kind of got that visor mask, gas mask with a helmet. But yeah, it is a figure that you could, you know, use a couple of different parts from. I mean, you have, you know, that Snake Eyes awesome commando legs.
Commando Snake Eyes legs, yeah, I think would be good for that.
Which are
definitely cool,
but my worry is that they've been used an awful lot across a lot of different things, you know, from like the Cobra Trooper.
They're like the sluts of the parts world.
Yeah, and Steel Brigade. and so that would be cool, but kind of, you're seeing that a lot in a whole bunch of the others. So that's why I was like thinking that maybe looking at...
in fact, just looking at Beachhead... on his own actually looks pretty cool, you know, like if you literally just painted his pants black.
Actually, no, I've got one in front of me. I'm just looking now. I retract what I was saying. Now this would be pretty sweet. Now this is not the figure that originates all these parts, but the Retaliation 3-pack with Firefly.
Yes.
Now where he uses Lifeline's legs, you know, and it kind of has those medical instruments that then look like sad. But you look at that would be really cool.
Yeah, man.
And Firefly, even the mask alone, if you could like have a gas mask that goes over that.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much the harness, but that harness would be good for other SAS characters where he's kind of got the bandolier with the pockets and the grenades and things like that. That would be good for like Sapper like the SAS Commando. But yeah, that would work pretty well.
Cool.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, so that's
So
that's Eagle covered. They could easily do it. Let's force them to do it.
Yeah, I think so. Write your petition into blah, blah, blah.
Chris McLeod at allthecoolstuff.co.uk /chuckdog1999. That was just for the What's on Joe Mind guys right there. Okay,
we kind of got that reference.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Right. So,
okay. How was that? Yes. Yes. Perfect. Perfect.
So thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning into our brand new show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to Gary, Justin, Mike and Chuck from What's on Joe Mind for everything. Thanks to our show sponsors and all of you guys that have supported us online and everyone that's listened and downloaded and all that kind of stuff. I'd like to personally thank Dave and Eddie for letting me get on board with this. It's been a pleasure, lads. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Chris for doing all the work.
Yeah,
you're
so
welcome. Well, let's save that thanks. Can we save that thanks until you've actually heard the edit? Because it could be horrendous. So I'm just kidding.
We're not going to listen to this thing anyway. So
yeah, that's a very good point because you've said everything already that you need, and you've heard everything live. So yeah, fair enough. So anyway, just leaves me to say, make sure you follow us on Twitter. At The Full Force. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheFullForce. Write to us via email, and that is thefullforce@allthecoolstuff.co.uk, and visit the website, thefullforce.com.
And I'd also like to quickly say, before Chris signs off, that on that email or on the Facebook, if you guys have got any ideas of what would make a good modern day version of the figures that we talk about, so where we've been talking about the SAS squad leader Eagle today, if you got your own recipe of what would make a good eagle, or even a custom that you've done, put it on the Facebook page, because that would be really cool to see, because there's a lot of interest, there's a lot of talk about Action Force at the moment, and it'd be really kind of great to like keep that momentum going, and the more people that like, you know, feed into this thing, then the more chance we've got like seeing some of these characters like having a second birth.
Absolutely. And of course we want to have, you know, we want to see people kind of reacting and responding and telling us what they think, and all that kind of stuff. As long as it's not nasty, because I will cry myself to sleep.
Yeah, I had this last week. I can confirm this. Chris will actually weep, you know, all night.
So to all listening, have a great month, and we'll see you next time on the Bye. Full Force podcast. Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Listening. Goodbye.